Scientists, negotiators, ministers and world leaders are gathered in Copenhagen in search of a strong response to the common global threat of climate change. As the Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change observes, science demands it, economics support it, future generations require it. In Copenhagen, for the next 10 days, governments are asked to reach agreement on all the essential elements of a comprehensive, fair and effective deal on climate change. A deal that both ensures long-term commitments and launches immediate action. In September, at the UN Climate Change Summit in New York, over 100 world leaders stood up and committed to seal a successful Copenhagen climate deal. The world now expects its leaders and the negotiations to deliver the ambitious outcome needed to turn the tide. And throughout the past year, indigenous peoples all over the world have been preparing for COP15, as this Copenhagen summit is being called. Meetings, workshops and conferences have been held in countries and regions, as well as jointly at the global level. All these meetings produced a large amount of documentation on how indigenous peoples experience the changing climate and how they foresee their lifestyles, culture and very survival to be seriously threatened in the future. Most importantly, the meetings served as platforms to engage in the international policy process around COP15. And joint messages to the world's climate change policymakers were sent out from all meetings. I had the privilege to speak to someone who is an internationally renowned expert on rural development, gender and indigenous peoples. He's also one of the participants at the summit in Copenhagen, and before leaving, found time to answer some of my questions.
My name is Frank Roy. I come from an indigenous community in northeast India. I'm currently working with the Christensen Fund, a U.S. foundation that is promoting and supporting what they call the stewards of biocultural diversity, which are essentially indigenous peoples or local communities that live in rather remote areas.
Now, we speak as the Copenhagen summit is about to begin. You are obviously taking your particular knowledge to this huge event, which is so vast and embracing. What will your focus be in Copenhagen in these coming days?
I have been working mainly with the indigenous communities around the world. The Christensen Fund, which I work in, we had organized in Alaska a meeting of indigenous peoples and climate change about a year ago, in which different indigenous peoples were given the opportunity or the space to say what are the issues that they think most important. And we heard stories of indigenous communities from the Pacific who gave us very vivid examples of how, you know, the warming has affected the tidal waves in their areas and therefore the cycle of plantings, and how some of them have become even climate change refugees.
What is a climate change refugee?
It means that in certain areas, A, because of the entry of salinization of salt or seawater into their lands, they are unable to grow their crops as much as they used to do. B, the erratic nature of the weather, which has led to more storms into these areas. And the rise of the sea levels, which have swamped certain areas. And therefore, people realize that within a very short time, their islands would disappear. And so they are preparing for that. In parts of northern Australia, you could see sites where indigenous peoples have started building their houses on stilts, which they never used to have before. And some of the smaller islands, you hear them talking that there are changes that they know that they would need to make a move. So these people are people who are being sort of taken out and who are negotiating with some countries or areas for migration.
So what are your hopes as regards what might come out of the summit, clearly referring to your particular field of activity?
Well, for us as indigenous peoples and involved with indigenous work, one of the big achievements in the last few years has been the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And in those, I think the world community recognized that indigenous peoples as a community have a right to live the way they want to live, and in connection with their lands, in connection with their culture, with their knowledge. During the climate change discussions in the earlier years, indigenous peoples were not at all involved, nor were they invited. They were probably too insignificant, you know. And at that very moment, I think the emphasis of the climate change discussions was essentially on the technical aspects, on the various scenarios that are built. However, I think today there is a recognition that actually some of the knowledge of indigenous peoples is important. For example, the Inuits in Greenland and other areas, they had, or even in Alaska, they had forewarned much earlier about some of the changes that they saw, but they were always ignored as very superstitious people. Today, I think there is an increasing group of people who realize that knowledge that they have is important. The second thing I think that has been realized is that actually the diversity around us and in the communities that we live in, that many of the indigenous peoples actually are guardians. For example, in a number of cases, conservationists have said that, you know, it is the indigenous peoples or the people who live in the forest areas who destroy the forests and the animals. And therefore, many communities have been displaced or moved out of this. But many of them have come to realize that actually that was completely untrue. The people, because of their special relationship with the land and with the nature of the communities, look at that relationship as a relationship where they need to defend and protect not only themselves, but also the world around them. Many indigenous communities, before they cut a tree or they hunt an animal, would ask for forgiveness and say, I'm doing this for the sake of my livelihood and sustenance, so please forgive me for doing this. Which means that therefore they will cut or hunt only when it is not necessary, but not do it just to maximize profits or to have the pleasure of killing or felling a tree.
Absolutely. Now, just one last question. As a former UN man, because you worked for the UN as well, are you hopeful that we're going to see any concrete action come out of this summit?
It is quite difficult to say because I think the issues that are today sort of been highlighted in Copenhagen are mainly the macro issues, where macro decisions are to be taken. And governments have their own sort of domestic compulsions before they take any action. But I think in some ways, some of the governments, even if they do not make announcements aside, realize that there is a need for some actions. There are some governments that also have problems politically because there is a very strong group too that says that climate change issues are a part of a myth that is being manipulatively spread out. But I think what is important is that at the lower, this conference has given a chance to a number of particularly indigenous peoples and others to have a voice. And I think there the UN has done a great thing by giving. We only hope that two, three things for which we are still fighting as indigenous peoples. One is that there is a recognition of the principle enunciated in the UN Declaration that whatever is done in the areas where indigenous peoples have their lands and their territories, it'll be done with their free, prior and informed consent. That principle is central, and we hope that, we're not very hopeful, but we still think that that's something for which we will fight on even after Copenhagen. The second issue, I think, which we hope we can get is that there is some sort of recognition in the text of the agreements or in the follow-up programs that the traditional knowledge of indigenous people is as important as the modern science, and that the two can complement each other in a way which will be for the benefit and well-being of the communities at large. And thirdly, I think we also hope that so far we have been observers in these meetings, and that from observers we have been allowed to take part in some of the negotiations, not so much in the climate change, but we hope that there will be a recognition one day that indigenous peoples are not just stakeholders, but are parties to any convention that may decide. After all, the biodiversity that's around, 80% of that biodiversity that exists today is in the lands of where indigenous people cohabit or live, and therefore their guardianship and stewardship seems to be an important point to recognize.